So we've been in the series Perspective, and each week we've just been talking about changing the way we see life. And oftentimes when we go through things that are very difficult or hard in life, we want God to change our situation or change our setting or change the circumstances of our life. But we've been saying here, sometimes really perspective is really all the change that we need. If we could just see things differently, we just see things as God sees, and we could just see things from a different perspective or vantage point, maybe that's really all the change that we need. And the first week we talked about how each season that comes in our life is like a puzzle piece that God gives us and hands us, because He's doing something beautiful, and one day we'll be able to see He's making a beautiful picture out of our life, and if we could just kind of get that overview picture of what He's building, it'd be amazing. So we just got to trust, even though we can't see the picture that's on the front of the puzzle box, we just got to trust that the piece of the puzzle that I'm dealing with right now, whether it's good or bad, is something that God's awesomely going to use to make something beautiful. Then last week we talked about how hindsight is 20/20, and that as we look back on our life, we can often see what was going on and how God was using something that happened when we were 10 years old to help us when we were 20 years old, or something that happened when we were 15 years old helps us when we're 40 years old. And one of the things we said, when you look back over life, what you're going to realize, what you're going to see as you look back over your life, is that God was with you every step of the way. So we said, what if we could live our life in the present with the advantage of hindsight, of knowing that God is with us right here no matter what it is that we're facing? We looked at the life of Joseph, and Joseph was able to live his life with this understanding and this perspective that God was with him, even in the worst times of his life. He knew that God was with him. And this week, the perspective we're looking at is really understanding our role and understanding the story and the script and the setting that we're placed in. And I remember, anybody watched Twins? Is anybody in the room who hasn't seen the movie Twins? Okay, it's worth going back and checking out on Netflix or something. It's actually a really funny movie. But I always thought when it came to that line in there about being the stuff left over, I had several thoughts. One of them, of course, was, how would you like to be the actor who, when they think about that role, they think of you? I mean, just let that marinate for a second. Picture your agent calling you up and saying, hey, we've got you a role, and we've got you a part you can play. What it is we're going to have Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's like the most awesome human body that's ever been created, and they need somebody that can put up next to him that just acts like absolutely pathetic, looks like they're just the junk left over from the perfect specimen that he is. And we think you'd be the perfect part. Okay. I remember a few years back talking with Chad. Chad ran our sound for many years, and he was a master's fine arts student at Regent. We've got several of those students who come to church here. And so I remember asking him about, you know, where do you see yourself? What kind of role do you see yourself playing? And he says, well, Steve, I'm not a leading man. And, you know, the key to acting is understanding and accepting your role and your character. He says, I'm not a leading man. I'm kind of a supporting character. And he says, if you try to go out and get parts that don't suit who you are as a person, he's like, you're never going to get it. He's like, I'm never going to get a leading man part. That's just not who I am. I'm always going to be a supporting actor. That's where I am. Then he says, but you know, there's good money to be made for that kind of role. I mean, think about Paul Giamatti. The guy, I don't think he's rarely ever leading guy in a movie. He's always the supporting guy. And you're like, who's that? Well, trust me, he's like the Kevin Bacon of our time. He's like in every movie out there. He's just always a supporting guy. How about Zach Galifianakis? He's not your leading guy, but he sure makes movies funny or creepy or weird. Kind of helps out. You know, Danny DeVito's carved out an amazing career playing those kind of roles. But just think for a moment, what if Danny DeVito tried out for the part of Conan the Barbarian? Or for those of you who are a little younger, try out for the part of Gladiator. See, Conan was Arnold Schwarzenegger back in his heyday playing the Gladiator. But maybe, how many of y'all saw Conan? How many of y'all have never seen Conan? I'm surprised how many people, I really think of us as a young church, and I wouldn't think that most people in our church would have even know what Conan the Barbarian is. That's like one of the movies that launched Arnold's career. So just picture if you're Danny DeVito and you're trying out for the role of Conan the Barbarian, or you're trying out for the role of Gladiator. Number one, they're going to laugh at you when you walk into the casting room, and it's just not going to work. And the thing is that most of us, we hear this, but most of us have this picture, this idea that all of life is a story about me. And I'm cast as a lead character in a movie about me, and it's this neat, fanciful, fairy tale, rags to riches sort of thing where I end up getting the girl of my dreams and the job of my dreams, and of course it's said at the very end of my life that I lived happily ever after. That's kind of the role that I'm looking to play. That's the role I auditioned for. That's the role I signed up for. That's the role I think I am destined, designed to play. But But when life kind of hits you, at some point you realize this life isn't all about you, and you're not the lead character in a story in a play about you that is some sort of fanciful, romantic, fairy tale dream. Rather, it's something completely other and different. This understanding has really helped me out a lot. I kind of was reminded of all of this in rereading a book this past summer by Donald Miller called A Million Miles in a Thousand Years. And one of the things I need to do with probably the next week or so is just kind of publish a biography of the stuff. I've been asking, a lot of people have asked me, like, how have you gotten through this? Well, this series is based on that. But also there were a lot of books that were very helpful for me. And one of them was this book, A Million Miles in a Thousand Years. And the whole premise of the book was they wanted to make a movie about Donald Miller's life. And then they went and talked with him, and they started investigating his life a little more, and they kind of came back and they said, you know, frankly, your life's a little too boring to make a movie out of it. We need to spice some things up a little bit. And he sort of took offense to that, but then he says, you know, I don't want my life to be so boring that nobody would ever want to watch it. I want to live my life in such a way that is interesting enough that I'll even want to enjoy it. And so that's kind of where that started and kind of sent him on this journey. And in the midst of that, he starts talking about some stuff he learned from a guy by the name of Viktor Frankl, who wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. Profound book from a guy who lived an amazing life. He was an Austrian-born psychiatrist and neurologist, so the guy had a little bit of brains to him. Unfortunately for him, though, he was Jewish, and he lived back in the 30s and 40s. And so you can imagine living in that part of the world at that time in history, he ended up and found himself and his family in a German concentration camp. And ultimately his wife was killed during the concentration camp. He watched most of the people that he knew be killed off. But so here he is, this psychiatrist in the midst of this concentration camp. And you can imagine what an amazing opportunity this gave him to just really to study human life and how do you deal with tragedy? How do you deal with suffering? And he watched people deal with it in all different kinds of ways. And he has the intellect and the brain power to kind of make some sense of this. And after he gets out, he actually survives the Holocaust. He writes this book called Man's Search for Meaning. And in there, he talks about dealing with suffering and how people dealt with suffering, and he watched how people who made it through dealt with it and people who didn't make it through deal with it. And he writes, life, even amidst the absurdity of human suffering, still had meaning. Suffering, as absurd as it seemed, pointed to a greater story. That if one could only construe themselves as a character within this greater story, they could find fulfillment in their tragic role, knowing that the plot was heading towards redemption. Let me read all that just again so you can kind of get the picture of what he's saying. It's very deep. And he's looking at everybody who's suffering around him and many people who are being executed and exterminated. People who weren't being exterminated were there just to facilitate the extermination of others. And so he says, life, even in the midst of all the absurdity of the human suffering, still had meaning. And suffering, as absurd as it seemed, pointed to a greater story. That if one could only construe themselves as a character within this greater story, they could find fulfillment in their tragic role, knowing that the plot was headed towards redemption. And reflecting on this quote, Donald Miller talks about a time in his own life where he struggled and was going through some suffering and disparity even of life and was trying to figure things out. And he says it was as if in that moment he said it was almost like I felt Viktor Frankl's voice whispering to me. And he was saying to me that I'm a tree in a story about a forest, and that the story of the forest is better than the story of the tree. That I'm a tree in a story about a forest, and the story of the forest is better than the story about the tree. You see, if I think that I am a tree in a story about a tree, then I, of course, want to be a redwood when I realize I'm not a redwood, and then I begin to wonder what's wrong with me. When somebody begins to come in and chop down my limbs and do something else, I wonder what's wrong with me. When something else grows up bigger and taller than me, I wonder what's wrong with me. And ultimately, when all the trees around me that I love and care about get chopped down, I wonder what is wrong with me. And when eventually I get chopped down, I wonder what is wrong with me. But if you begin to realize that you're just a tree in a story about a forest, it changes the way you see your role. It gives you a different perspective on life and where this is headed. And there was a guy in Scripture who really got this. I mean, who really understood this probably better than anybody else who's ever lived. And I say that with great confidence because, after all, God did allow this guy to write 2/3 of the New Testament. So I would assume that the guy who got to write 2/3 of the New Testament probably had a good head on his shoulders, probably had a good perspective on life and how he saw things. After all, he is, for many years of his life, acting and serving as the voice piece of God in many instances. And he had an amazing perspective. And at one point in a letter to the Philippians, he writes, and I'm just going to kind of pick up, in Philippians chapter 1, verse 20, he says, "Yes, and I will continue to rejoice." This is just going to kind of start midstream here. And just before I go any further, I got to give you just the amazing profoundness of what he just said there. He writes, "And I will continue to rejoice." Now he's not writing this from the palace of the king, living in a lap of luxury. He's actually writing this from a prison. He's writing this from a prison cell, and back in that day, it's not like prisons like ours, like we have, where the inmates get to watch TV shows and get three meals a day. Not that saying that prison's very fun nowadays, it's never a good place, but back then, they didn't even feed you. You were basically left up to the mercy of the community to come in and feed you and to provide for you and to care for you. If you got sick in prison, well, that's just tough. That's what you get for being in prison. And so here he is in prison at the ultimate worst spot you could ever imagine. Now, think about everything that God called him to do. This is a guy, Paul. God says, "You are going to be my missionary to the Gentiles." In other words, to everybody who's not a Jew, you're going to be the point man for all of this. And then he ends up in prison. And if Paul believed that this whole life was a story about him getting to be the amazing missionary that he is and not about God, there would be nothing to rejoice about. As a matter of fact, his life has gotten seriously derailed if he's in jail. And I've even asked that same question. God, why did you take a guy like Paul, let him spend so many years of his life in prison, and then have him get killed about my age? That makes no sense to me. But here Paul is in prison, and he says, "I will continue to rejoice." Obviously, this guy has a different perspective on life than the rest of us have. Would you agree? Because he's at the ultimate worst point. He says, "I'm just going to continue to rejoice." So then he goes on and he says, "For I know that through your prayers and the help given me by the Spirit of Jesus Christ, that what has happened to me will actually turn out for my deliverance." So he says, listen, as I look at my role and the role that God wants me to play, I know he's not done with me yet. I know he still has more for me to do. So even though I'm in jail now, he's still going to do something with me. And he's still going to use this somehow to carry out his purposes. And I'll get to maybe in later weeks how God uses him in jail. It's amazing what he does with him in jail while he's there. But he goes on, he says, "I eagerly expect and hope that I will no way be ashamed, but have sufficient courage so that now, as always, that Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death." And here's the verse that most people have heard at some point in church. Philippians chapter 1, verse 21. He says, "Because for me to live is Christ and to die is gain." As if he's saying, listen, I understand that I am a tree in a story about a forest, and that forest is Jesus Christ. The story of life is all about him. It's everything in life is about him. I think it's funny how many times this kind of smacks us in the face and we ignore it all the same. I mean, the very fact that we say it is 2013, what is that in reference to? It's in reference to around or about the time that Jesus Christ came into this world. Is it any wonder that all of life, everything about life is pointing and trying to show to you and scream to you that this whole life is about Jesus Christ? He is the author and he's the finish. He is the Alpha. He is the Omega. Everything in this life is about him. And the book of Revelation says says Revelation chapter 11, verse 15, it says, "The kingdom of the world has become the kingdom of our Lord and the Savior, Jesus Christ, and his kingdom will reign forever and ever." It's basically saying, listen, the whole narrative of life is about the world which is not under the reign of Christ, which eventually will become under the reign of Christ. That at one point, every knee will bow, every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. That's what the story of all this is about. And either you figure that out now, or you realize that one day later, because every knee will bow. And if you figure that out now, what you begin to realize is that my story is really just about being a supporting actor in his story. And as you embrace that role, there's a change. And that's where Paul says, you know, for me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. He would go on to say towards the end of this letter, in Philippians chapter 4, verse 12, he says, "For I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want." Content. It's amazing that a guy who's in jail is saying, "I'm content. Nothing has turned out the way that he thought. Life isn't going according to plan." And yet he says, "You know, I'm okay. I'm good with it. You know, I don't have everything that, you know, I wanted to have, but, you know, I'm okay. I'm content with where I am." That means I've accepted it, I understand it, and I'm okay with it. that only comes in light of having this understanding, this perspective that, you know, I'm just a tree in a story about a forest and this is where God placed me, then okay. One of the things that they do when they're making movies is they will often film the very last scene of the movie first. And that way they can make sure that every other scene that they film always goes back and kind of ties in together with the final scene. Also, it's very helpful for the actors. And once they've acted out and played out the final scene of the movie or of the play or whatever it is, they can then go back and play out every other part in such a way that their character fits where it is that they're going. And for Paul, I always say that, you know, I read his conclusions here in Philippians and I say it's amazing, it's great and all, but he cheated. I'm sorry, he cheated in life. I mean, God allowed him to cheat, but he got to cheat. And what I mean by that is that it says he wrote a letter to the Corinthian church about 10 years before this called 2 Corinthians, in which he mentions in there that he got to go up and look around heaven for a while. He got to see how it all ends. He got to go up there and look around and picture and see where everything in life ends. And so is it, I mean, you think that maybe changed his perspective in the way that he saw life? Getting to see the final scene, getting to see the final picture. I know it would for me. And if he's in my class, he's somebody whose paper I want to cheat off of. I'm just saying. And he wrote you a few letters so you can cheat off of that for your life and say, hey, here's a guy who's been there. Here's a guy who's seen it. He knows where this whole thing is headed. And he's saying, listen, I'm content here in prison because I know where this whole thing is headed. And he says, for me to live as Christ and to die as gain. He says, listen, I know there's a huge cast party waiting for me when this whole thing's over. There is a great big old wedding feast. I got to go. I got to see the table. I didn't get to eat anything while I was there. I just got to look around. But I know that's where it's all headed. So for me to live as Christ, I'm going to play out the role God's given me because I know in the end it ends at a wedding feast. And in classic Shakespearean theater, a tragedy always ended in a funeral and a comedy always ended in a wedding. And just let that sink in for a moment. Do you see your life as moving towards a conclusion of a funeral? Do you see your life as moving towards ultimately one day being at a feast in heaven at a wedding? You see, if this story is all about me and I have the mantra that he who dies with the most toys wins, my life ends at a funeral. My dreams end at a funeral. But if I can take a step back and begin to realize that this is a story about God, and about Jesus Christ, and that story ends at a wedding feast. If I get to be a part of that, if I'm just a character, if I'm just a supporting character in that role, and in that place, and in that setting, well then my whole thing ends in a wedding, and this is a part of a comedy, not a tragedy. With this same thought, Paul wrote, not just the Philippians with the same thought, he also wrote in the letter to the 2 Corinthians where he talks about getting to go see heaven. He actually mentioned this exact same thought. He says, therefore, we're always confident. This is 2 Corinthians chapter 5. He says, therefore, we're always confident and know that as long as we're home in the body, we're away from the Lord. For we live by faith and not by sight. He says, you know, I'm not living based on what my circumstances are showing me. I'm living based on faith of what I've already seen. I'm living on the faith of what I already saw in heaven. This is where we're all headed. And so I want you to live by faith, not by sight, because you know where this is all headed. It's all headed for a wedding feast, not just for a funeral. And he goes on to say, so I'm confident of this, would say this, I would prefer to be away from the body and at home with the Lord. He says, listen, I would much rather be at the cast party at the wedding feast. But I'm okay being here as long as God wants me to be here. He says, so as long as I'm here, he says, we make it our goal to please him. I'm going to play out my part to please him. Also in Miller's book, he talks about how life is a lot like improv theater. This is actually one of the metaphors that has really helped me kind of grasp and have a good perspective and really kind of understand how life is and works out. And in improv, what happens is that before the actors come out, the audience determines, either the audience or a moderator determines kind of what the character, what characters that the actors are going to play and what the setting is that they're going to play. And I actually had thought about getting some reading students to do this, but I didn't think we had enough time for it. So just to give you kind of a picture of this, maybe if you've ever seen Whose Line Is It Anyway, this thing kind of happens. Give me a few different characters people could play. A hero. Well, give me like a specific person, like Superman. All right, we got Superman. All right, give me a different kind of character. Some what? Darth Vader. What is it with Darth Vader? The last service had Darth Vader. He must be like the ultimate character. All right, so we got Darth Vader, Superman. Give me some other characters for our improv here. Choker? Oh, the Joker. All right. And the Hobbit. There must be some real sci-fi nuts in this church, because last service we had Darth Vader and Bilbo. All right, so I don't know what it is, but we got, you know, these people. Either you were watching the last service and you just wanted to repeat it because you liked it so much. I don't know. All right, so we got our characters. Now give me some settings, some scenes or settings from life. Christmas? Space? Halloween? We already got one holiday. We'll go Halloween maybe as well. What else? Give me an event in life. Super Bowl and childbirth. All right, so what happens in improv is the characters come out, and they come up on stage, and the moderator says to them, okay, you are Darth Vader, and you are the Hobbit, and you're in the middle of childbirth, go. And they just got to figure it out. They got to figure out how to act this thing out for the enjoyment of the audience. And of course, I kind of picture this. That probably what would happen is that you'd have Vader there standing next to an invisible woman who's giving birth, and the Hobbit comes out and he says, "I am your father." I mean, I just picture that's kind of maybe how it, I don't know how it would play out. Just something would come out, but you have to go with it. And then midstream, while it's childbirth, all of a sudden the curtain comes back and says, "You've got two tickets to the Super Bowl, you're leaving right now." And all of a sudden they find themselves in the Super Bowl and you're the quarterback, Darth Vader. Only as soon as the ball is hiked, you become Superman. Go! And you gotta play that out. And it sounds crazy. And it sounds so random. But my life has been pretty crazy. And a lot of things in my life seem really random. And the key to improv is that you just have to go with it. And everything in improv seems so spontaneous. It seems like if all the actors are just kind of up there, just out of nowhere and out of the blue, this kind of just hits them. But there's actually some kind of hidden rules, some hidden kind of ways that actors who are trained to do good improv know these things. And one of the number one rules is just to go with it. Whatever the other person does, whatever the scene is, you just say yes. You can't fight the scene. And you can't just be whatever character you want to be. You've got to go with whatever it is, whatever role you've been given in that moment and in that time. Whenever I think about this, I always think about this one scene, this classic picture of improv where everything goes wrong. And if you got that, let's just put that up. Obviously, you've got a situation in a setting there where he doesn't care what is supposed to be going on in the room. He doesn't care what the movie script is. He doesn't care what the author of the improv has done. He doesn't care about whatever character everybody else is playing. He doesn't even care about where it's supposed to go. All he cares about is the scene and the role that he wants to play. And he's Agent Michael Scarn, and it's a movie about him where he's the hero. And then if you watch the rest of that episode, the way it plays out is that nobody wants to act with him, nobody wants to play with him, and everything he does is not entertaining and nobody wants to watch it. And you see, in our life, it's as if God gives you a slip of paper and he says, okay, you're a mom, you were born in America into a middle, upper class family, you've got two kids, go. You're a peasant, you live on $2 a day, you're born in an African village, go. At age 25, you come down with leukemia, go. You're a 38-year-old pastor with three kids and your wife dies, go. And you got to live it out. You got to play it out. For the enjoyment of the one who gave you the role. And it's a play that's all about him. And you've got a role to play. And either you fight that role or you go with it. Either you just say, yes, okay, I'll go with it. I need some wisdom here to play it out, but I'll go with it. I need some understanding here. I don't really know what to do, but give me some direction here. I'll go with it. Yes, I'll embrace that. I'll take whatever it is that you give me, whatever role you place in front of me, and I'll play it out. And funny thing about improv is you never see the characters or the actors ask why. And have you ever watched Whose Line Is It Anyway? And they say, okay, you're Darth Vader, and you're Bilbo Baggins, and you're giving birth. Go. And they don't ever look and go, you serious? Why? Why should we even do that? No, they just go with it. They just go with it because they understand the nature of the setting and the scene and what it's all about, because it's all improv. And all of life is just improv. God doesn't give you the script. He doesn't tell you what to say. He lets you say whatever you want to say. But he gives you your setting and he gives you your scene. And he says, listen, do all this so that it might please me, as Paul says. For you to live as Christ, to die as gain, play it out with that as your mantra, that is your goal. You know, the problem we have with this role is that we often think to ourselves that I'm not really cut out to play whatever role it is that God set before me. Sometimes it seems overwhelming. Sometimes it seems like if God should have gotten somebody else to do this. I mean, how many times have you looked at your own situation and said, you know, God, I'm not cut out for this. I'm not made for this part. There was somebody better to mother my kids, and it's not me. You know, I mean, this whole past year, I felt like as if the first stringer went down, and I'm just kind of the backup quarterback coming in, hoping to get through the Super Bowl. That's just kind of where I feel like I'm at. And how many times have I looked up to God and said, God, I can't do this. Maybe you've been down that same road. You know, that same clip, I've often had the thought of just saying, God, I just feel like as if I am the junk left over in life. And I begin to think that God, you need somebody like Arnold to play the part that you've given me. And I really feel like as if he's messed up with the whole casting here, you know. But, you know, they wanted Danny DeVito in that role for one specific reason. Danny DeVito is pudgy. He's 5 feet tall and he's balding. And although Arnold is like the perfect human specimen, if there ever was one chiseled out back in the 80s, of course, not talking about like the governor, post-governor, housemaid thing. I'm talking about like back in the 80s when he was Conan, you know, I mean, he was the Terminator. He had the perfect chiseled physique. But they wanted to make sure that everybody got just how amazing this human specimen was, and so they wanted to put him up against Danny DeVito. Because against Danny DeVito, he looks all the more ripped and chiseled and amazing. Now, just let that linger for a second. In the verse right after where Paul says, I've learned the secret of being content. This is over in Philippians chapter 4. Right after he says, I've learned the secret of being content, that's verse 12. Verse 13, he says, for I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. It's like, okay, all right. I'm just trying to like sort this thing out in my mind. Like, why is that the next verse right after you just said, I've learned the secret of being content, whether no matter what the situation is, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. Well, do you know where Paul came to the conclusion that he can do all things through him who gives me strength? Do you know where that came from? That actually comes from the letter he wrote to the Corinthians. And if you go back to 2 Corinthians chapter 12, you see it there. And he's looking at his life, and this is long before he gets thrown in prison, long before his other stuff happened. It's kind of early in his ministry. And he's looking at his life, and he's saying, God, I think you should have chosen somebody else. Because I got issues. And I need you to solve these issues, or else I can't do what it is you want me to do. And so he begs, and he begs, and he pleads, God, make me somebody else so I can do what it is that you want me to do, because I'm not good enough right now. And I can't do this right now. So he writes, he says, you know, 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take this problem away from me. But God said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. And my power is made perfect in your weakness. So he says, once I got that, he says, I just will boast all the more gladly that I'm Danny DeVito. He says, I'll boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. And that is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in the weaknesses and the insults and the hardships and the persecutions and the difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. See, when you realize that Jesus is the main character, not you, he's got the leading role, not you, he's the Arnold in the story, not you, when I look in the mirror and I see like I feel like I'm more like Danny DeVito than Arnold Schwarzenegger. Makes me begin to realize, you know, he's not looking for somebody who's got the perfect chiseled spiritual physique. He's not looking for somebody who's got everything together, who's got everything in a row. He's saying, listen, you are the one I want to play out this role in the setting that you're in. I placed you here for this time and this purpose. Why? It's not your weaknesses that should concern you. What you should look at and say, listen, it's your weakness that's going to allow my son to be the star of this show. Because your weakness is only going to reveal His glory. And your weakness is only going to reveal His strength. People are going to look at you and say, how did you do it? And you say, I couldn't do it without Him. And He is going to get all the glory. And everybody will look at the end of this and say, no, this whole thing was about God from beginning to end. But if you go out there and try to be the superstar in your show, you're going to make a mess of it. So embrace your role and embrace your part. Embrace that you're not all that you wanted to be. But you're exactly who it is that God wanted to be in that situation, time, and setting. It's no different than Moses when God calls him, listen, I want you to be the one to lead my people out of Egypt. And he's like, I got a stuttering problem. Seriously? And God's like, what? You don't think I realize you have a stuttering problem? Who do you think made your mouth in the first place, Moses? Your shortcomings, your sinful hang-ups, your issues with depression or self-confidence, your size, your physique, the face that you look at in the mirror that you don't like. You don't think God knows you're that way? Yet He still cast you in the part because you're that way. Because you're Danny DeVito, you got that part. So His son could get all the glory and all the honor and all the praise. Will you join with me as we close?